Conrad wasn't surprised to find the same bunch that had escorted him and Arturo earlier, minus Holly Barnstable, waiting outside the cabin. He had a pretty good idea what was about to happen.
Take our guests to where they'll be spending the night?
Sure, Dan.
Conrad and Arturo exchanged a glance. Kingman wasn't going to wait any longer to dispose of them. His henchmen would take the prisoners away from the little settlement, kill them, and dump the bodies in a ravine where they would never be found, or something along those lines. Then they would hide the buggy and Conrad's horse, and in the morning, Kingman would tell Selena they had left early, before daybreak, to resume their trip to San Francisco. There might be a part of her that would doubt the story, but she wouldn't be able to do anything about it. The men carrying the shotgun shifted the weapons and looped thumbs over the hammers.
Come on, you two.
Conrad looked at Kingman.
You don't have to do this. We're no threat to you. Whatever you're doing here, it's none of our business.
I can't take that chance. Not after we've worked so hard to make a place for ourselves. Not while we're surrounded by enemies on all sides. I'm sorry, but this is the way it has to be.
Kingman looked at his men.
See to it.
Conrad gave a little shake of his head to Arturo. They could raise a ruckus, but all Kingman had to do was yell, and dozens of reinforcements would come running. As bad as 5-2 odds were, it could be even worse. They went down the steps, and the men closed in around them. With shotguns prodding them in the back, Conrad and Arturo marched along the road.
All right, head up over that hill.
Night had fallen, but there was enough starlight for Conrad to see the tree-covered hill to the left of the road. He angled toward it and trudged up the slope with Arturo at his side. On the other side of the hill was a little canyon that cut toward the mountains to the south. Once the group entered the canyon, it was hard to see, so one of the men scraped a lucifer to life and lit a torch he had brought with him. With the hill between them and the settlement, they didn't have to worry about the flickering light being seen. The canyon twisted and turned for about half a mile.
All right, that's far enough.
When you followed Kingman over here from Elder Hyssop's community, I bet you didn't realize you'd wind up being murderers, did you?
Forget it! That might work with an idiot like Ollie, but you're not gonna talk us out of doing what has to be done. The valley has to be protected at all costs. Anyway, you're just a couple of Gentiles. After the things your kind has done to us over the years, we won't lose any sleep over killing the two of you.
Conrad heard the men backing off behind them, getting some room so they could use those scatter guns. The man holding the torch raised it higher. The harsh glare from the flames washed over Conrad and Arturo and cast long shadows on the ground in front of them. Conrad tensed, readying himself to whirl around and make a desperate leap for the closest man. One thing about shotguns, they were very indiscriminate weapons. If he could get close enough to one of the men before the others pulled their triggers, they would have to hold their fire for fear of hitting their companions.
Hey, what's going on here?
In the split second that followed, Conrad recognized Ollie's voice. The five men jerked their heads around toward him. Conrad launched himself at the nearest man in a diving tackle. He crashed into him. The man went down, and the torch flew out of his hand. Arturo leaped forward and snatched the torch out of the air, then slung it in the faces of the other men. They flinched away from the burning brand, giving Conrad time to yank the pistol of the man he had tackled from its holster. He tipped up the barrel and pulled the trigger. Arturo charged after throwing the torch. He was no brawler, but he was fighting for his life. He grabbed the twin barrels of a shotgun and wrenched the weapon upward. He and the man who held the greener staggered back and forth as they wrestled over the shotgun. Conrad swung the gun in his hand and squeezed off another round. A man howled in pain and dropped his shotgun as he clutched at a bullet-shattered shoulder. That left Arturo's opponent and the man Conrad had tackled. Conrad brought the gun barrel down against the man's forehead. Leaping to his feet, Conrad rushed toward Arturo and the last man. They were turning around and around as they struggled. Waiting for a second until he had the right opening, Conrad slammed the revolver against the man's skull with stunning force. Instantly, the man let go of the shotgun and his knees folded up. He dropped senseless to the ground. Conrad spun around, hoping the gun in his hand had at least one round left in it. He leveled the gun at Ollie, who came forward into the light cast by the torch, still flickering on the ground. Ollie had his revolver pointed shakily at Conrad.
Mr. Browning, what are you doing?
Those are my friends you shot.
They may be your friends, Ollie, but they were going to murder Arturo and me.
Why would they do that?
Because Kingman ordered them to.
Dan wouldn't do that. He's a good man. He wouldn't have anybody killed.
I think you know better. I sure wish you'd put up your gun. I don't want to hurt you.
But Dan and Selena had you to dinner.
That was a facade for Miss Webster's benefit. Knowing that she's fond of us, he wanted to make her believe everything was all right. Then he could dispose of us without her ever knowing anything about it.
Arturo's right, Ollie. He would have told Selena in the morning that we left early and headed on to California, when actually these men were going to kill us and hide our bodies.
No, this is all crazy.
You saw for yourself what was going on. They were about to cut us to ribbons with those shotguns. Why else would they bring us all the way out here like this?
Conrad could see the struggle on Ollie's face. He had cast his lot with Kingman and the others, but being a cold-blooded killer wasn't in his nature. Finally, after a long, tense moment, Ollie lowered his revolver.
I knew it wasn't right. When Dan had us start holding up those trains, I knew it wasn't going to be the way he said it'd be. He said we'd live here in peace and everybody would leave us alone. But I didn't know we'd have to steal to do it, or kill innocent folks.
That was the final piece of the puzzle, Conrad thought. The outcast saints really were outlaws, just as he had suspected. The Southern Pacific line wasn't that far. They could hold up a train, then retreat to the valley. Some of the furnishings in the cabins had probably come from those robberies.
Dan plans on rustling Elder Hyssop's cattle too, doesn't he?
I think so. It won't work, though. The Elder won't let him get away with it. He'll send out Leatherwood and the rest of the Avenging Angels to track us down.
He holstered his gun.
I'm starting to wish I'd never left Juniper Canyon.
I thought Elder Hyssop forced you out. Banished you.
He banished Dan because Dan and Selena wanted to get married. Dan got some other fellas to go with him. There were plenty who liked certain girls but had to watch while they were married off to the Elder's friends. And there were some of us, like me, who came along because our friends were leaving. Dan and I've been pards ever since we were kids. You fellas get on out of here. I'll take care of the boys you shot, and I won't raise the alarm until you've had a chance to put some distance behind you.
You're sending us out on foot. That's a death sentence. As soon as Kingman finds out what happened, he'll come after us, and he won't have any trouble hunting us down.
I'm giving you a chance. That's all I can do. I ain't gonna betray my friends any more than that.
Conrad started to consider the odds of agreeing to Ollie's proposal, but was interrupted by the familiar sounds of gunfire in the distance. Ollie swung around and stared off toward the settlement.
What in the world?
Shots continued to blast. Conrad's conclusion was inescapable. War had come to the Valley of the Outcast Saints. Arturo held the greener. Conrad bent swiftly and pulled two more revolvers from the holsters of the men he'd shot. He tucked the guns behind his belt and picked up a shotgun.
Let's go. Leatherwood and the Avenging Angels must have found the valley.
No! Leatherwood will kill anybody who gets in his way while he's trying to carry out Elder Hyssop's orders.
We know that as well as you do. We've swapped lead with him a couple of times ourselves.
The three of them ran back down the canyon and up the hill. When they reached the top, they paused to look toward the settlement. Conrad had already noticed an orange glow in the sky, so he wasn't surprised to see flames leaping up. At least one of the cabins was on fire. He reached out to grasp Ollie's arm as the young man started to rush down the hill.
Wait a minute.
But those are my friends. I've got to help them.
If we go charging in there, Leatherwood and his men will just gun us down too. Let's figure out what we're going to do before we get there. You know this valley a lot better than we do. Is there a way we can circle around and get back to the settlement without using the road?
Well, yeah, there are some other trails.
Lead the way.
Okay.
They left the road and trotted through groves of trees and along ridges. Ollie seemed to know where he was going, even though it was too dark to see very well. The shooting began to taper off, and Conrad thought that was a bad sign. When it stopped completely a few minutes later, he knew it wasn't good. They came up behind Kingman's cabin. It was on fire, and even in the trees 30 yards away, Conrad felt the heat of the blaze against his face. The flames cast a large circle of hellish light, and he saw a number of men on horseback. They wore the dusters and broad-brimmed hats of the Avenging Angels, proof that Jackson Leatherwood had tracked his quarry to the valley. A second later, Conrad saw Leatherwood himself. It was impossible to mistake that scarred, ugly face. He rode back and forth, holding a Winchester pointed upward, the butt propped against his thigh. He wore an arrogant sneer as he surveyed the destruction his men had carried out. A number of bodies lay sprawled in the firelight, and several more outcast saints had been taken prisoner and herded together. Heavily armed men on horseback surrounded them. Ollie drew his gun and started to lift it. Conrad caught his wrist and forced it down.
Let me go. I think I can hit Leatherwood from here.
That's doubtful. And even if you did, it wouldn't change anything. The rest of them would just charge over here and kill us.
I can't let them get away with this.
I didn't say anything about letting them get away with it. But we'll have to be smart about it.
Oh, I've never been smart, Mr. Browning. Fact is, I'm kind of dumb.
Then let me do the thinking for us. As it happens, I'm pretty smart. Most of the time.
Conrad, look. It's Miss Webster.
A couple of dismounted gunmen held Selena, one on each side, and were forcing her toward Leatherwood. As they came to a stop in front of the leader, Leatherwood sat there for a moment, then slid his rifle back in the saddle boot and swung down from his horse. His hand came up and cracked across Selena's face with such force the blow would have knocked her down if the two men hadn't been holding her.
Take it easy. Leatherwood's time is coming.
Not soon enough for me.
Leatherwood said something to his men and made a curt gesture. They dragged Selena away. He mounted up again, and a moment later, one of his men rode up with Selena astride his horse in front of the saddle, his arm tight around her. With that, the Avenging Angels galloped out of the settlement, taking Selena with them, but leaving the stunned survivors of the attack behind. Conrad was a little surprised Leatherwood hadn't ordered them executed. Maybe he figured he had wiped out enough of the outcast saints that they weren't a threat anymore.
Now what do we do?
Come on. Some of those men may be wounded and need help.
As they came out of the trees, the roof of Kingman's cabin collapsed, sending a huge shower of sparks high, lighting up the sky. One of the men spotted Conrad, Arturo, and Ollie approaching.
It's them! The outsiders! They led Leatherwood here!
The men surged toward Conrad and his companions. Ollie stepped in front of Conrad and Arturo and held up his hands.
Hold it! You can't blame this on these men. We brought them here. Leatherwood followed our trail from that camp down by the railroad.
Why are you defending them, Ollie? They're Gentiles.
Yeah, but they haven't done anything wrong. All they ever did was help Selena. And for that...
Ollie still didn't want to admit Kingman had tried to have Conrad and Arturo murdered. Conrad stepped forward.
Listen to me. I'm going after Leatherwood. He has to pay for what he's done here tonight. If anybody wants to come with me, you'll be more than welcome. But I'm settling the score with Leatherwood one way or another.
They didn't just take Selena, they took my Rachel too, and the other women we had here. Took them back to Father Agony and his cronies. I don't like you, mister, but if you think you can help us get them back, I'm willing to go along with you.
Not me. I'm done with this. Dan Kingman said we'd start our own community here where everyone would be treated fairly, but all he did was turn us into a bunch of outlaws. I don't want any part of it anymore.
Anybody who feels like that is free to go.
He sensed that by the sheer force of his personality, he had taken control of the situation, as he had so often in the business world, back in that other life of his. He had been able to walk into a room filled with men hostile to what he wanted, and before he was finished, he was given them orders. Four men were willing to go after Leatherwood, while five refused.
There are some of our boys up in that little canyon on the other side of Cedar Hill. Some of them are wounded and need help.
What happened up there, Ollie?
Dan sent them on an errand, and it didn't work out. You don't have to come with Mr. Browning and me, but the least you can do is give those boys a hand before you leave the valley.
The men agreed to do that.
We'd better see about getting some horses ready to ride.
Leatherwood's men busted down the corral fence and scattered the horses. They're all over the valley by now.
Then we better start looking for them. Can't afford to waste any time if we're going to catch up to Leatherwood before he and his bunch get back to Juniper Canyon.
Oh, my lord. Look at that.
Conrad saw where the man was staring and swung around to look in the same direction. He was shocked to see a figure stumbling toward them. The man's clothes were charred tatters, and his skin was blistered in some places and covered with soot in others. Conrad had no trouble recognizing him, though. Dan Kingman was still alive. Conrad's hands tightened on the shotgun he held. He didn't believe in taking chances. Kingman appeared to be unarmed, and judging by his shambling gait, he was somewhat disoriented. He came to a stop in front of the men and stared at them, not seeming to comprehend what he was looking at. Ollie took a step toward him and held out a hand.
Dan, are you all right?
Kingman flinched away for a second, then shook his head. He didn't seem to be saying no to Ollie's question. It was more of a clearing the cobwebs gesture.
Ollie?
Then he looked past the big blonde man and focused on Conrad.
Brownie!
Take it easy, Kingman.
Kingman's blistered face twisted in a scowl. He lurched forward a step and raised his hands.
You did this! You brought Leatherwood here!
Ollie got between Conrad and Kingman, just as he had with the other men earlier.
Hold on, Dan. That's not the way it is. We're the ones who left the trail up here to the valley. We made Mr. Browning and Mr. Vincenzo come with us, remember?
The Avenging Angels never found this valley before.
Maybe they never looked all that hard until Selena ran off with Father Agony's money. Maybe they didn't really care where the rest of you went.
Selena!
Kingman swung around to stare in wide-eyed horror at the burned-out cabin.
Selena!
Ollie hurried to grab him as Kingman started toward the cabin.
She ain't in there, Dan. Do you hear me? Selena's not in there. But she's all right. We saw her just a little while ago.
Kingman sagged in Ollie's grip in obvious relief at that news. He looked around.
Then, where is she? Is she here?
I'm sorry, Dan. Leatherwood took her.
Kingman turned his head to stare up at Ollie.
Took her? You mean...
By now the Avenging Angels are on their way back to Juniper Canyon with Selena and the other women who were here. But we're going after them.
Going after them? You mean to get her back?
Her and the other women.
And to see that Leatherwood has his just desserts meted out to him.
Kingman looked up at Ollie and nodded.
You can let go of me now. I'm not out of my head anymore. I'll be all right.
As Ollie released him, Kingman turned his attention to Conrad.
I'm coming with you.
First, tell me how you managed to survive that fire.
I don't have to explain anything to you.
Well, I'd sure like to know, too. When I saw your cabin burning up like that, and you weren't out here with the other fellas, I figured you sure were in there and were a goner.
Kingman continued to glare at Conrad for a second before he shrugged.
I almost was. I think we're wasting time talking about this, but... when the shooting started, I ran outside to see what was going on. But there were so many bullets flying around, I had to retreat into the cabin. Anyway, I wanted to protect Selena. A couple of Leatherwood's men managed to bust through the door before I could stop him, and one of them slugged me with a rifle butt. He was gonna shoot me, but the other one stopped him. Said they ought to burn the cabin down around me. That Elder Hyssop would like that. He said I was going to wind up burning in the pits of hell anyway, so I might as well start by burning here. That's the last I heard before I passed out. When I came to, I thought I was already in hell, all right. There was fire all around me. My clothes were on fire. I realized I was still in the cabin, and I made it to my feet. Part of the back wall was already burned through, so I had to jump through the flames, but managed to get out that way. Then I fell down and rolled around and put out my clothes and I started to crawl away from the fire. I guess I passed out again. I woke up a few minutes ago behind what's left of the cabin. We've wasted enough time. We need to get started after Leatherwood.
What you need is some doctoring. You got burns all over you, Dan.
I don't care about that. What happens to me doesn't matter. It's Selena.
The Avenging Angels scattered the horses. It's going to take some time to round them up. While we're doing that, you can get those burns tended to. I'm sure somebody here knows how to take care of injuries like that. Find some clothes that aren't half burned off you, too.
Conrad looked around at the men who were going after Leatherwood.
We'll all need guns. Where's my buggy?
Well, we parked it in the barn. It should be all right.
I got a couple extra pistols in my gear if we need them. Ollie, you make sure Kingman gets some medical attention.
Sure thing. I can take care of that myself.
While Conrad was speaking, Kingman stared at him. As shaken up as he'd been by his narrow escape from the fire, Kingman hadn't realized Conrad and Arturo shouldn't be there. He wondered why they were still alive, and how things had worked out that Conrad was given orders. Men scattered to look for the horses.
Come on back to my cabin with me, Dan. I got some salve we used to use on Elder Hyssop's cattle when we'd brand them. I reckon it might work for burns like this, too.
Wait a minute.
Kingman stepped away from him and confronted Conrad.
Listen, Browning...
Whatever you're going to say, I don't want to hear it. And I'm sure as hell not interested in offering explanations for anything that might be puzzling you. Let's just say your plans didn't work out the way you expected. From here on out, all I'm interested in is getting Selena away from those lunatics who have her now. Are we clear on that?
Kingman stared at him for a moment, the anger in his eyes fading, until he finally nodded.
Yeah, we're clear. And whatever you can do to help her, I appreciate it, Browning.
No thanks necessary. Go with Ollie. I want to see if I can find my horse.
Gingerly, Ollie took hold of one of Kingman's burned arms and led him away toward the cluster of cabins.
Do you believe that young Mr. Kingman's change of heart is genuine?
I'm not going to count on it. I still don't trust him.
Nor do I.
Arturo slid his fingertips along the smooth stock of the shotgun he held.
I believe I am going to appoint myself the task of keeping a close eye on the gentleman.
Sounds good to me. Let's go find those horses.
Conrad knew they couldn't go after Selena without horses, but the delay while they searched for the stampeded animals caused worry to gnaw at his thoughts. He hoped he'd be able to locate the Black Gelding, because he knew how strong and dependable it was, but he would take any mount he could find. As it worked out, the first horse he and Arturo found was a roan. Conrad slipped the leather harness over the roan's head, and he handed the reins to Arturo, who led the roan while they continued looking for another horse. A few minutes later, Conrad heard some racket in a thicket of brush. A large, dark shape pushed itself out of the thicket and walked over to him.
It's good to see you, too.
Conrad slipped the bridle on his horse.
Since we have our full allotment of horses, I suppose we should head back to the cabins now.
Yeah, but we'll keep our eyes open along the way. If we find any more, we'll try to drive them that direction. How are you at riding bareback?
Bareback? Completely inexperienced and vaguely horrified at the mere concept. Riding with a good saddle is perilous enough to the male anatomy. But I suppose if you insist...
No. We'll lead them. Come on.
They didn't see any more horses on their way back to the settlement, but by the time they got there, three of the men who had agreed to come with them had arrived, not only with mounts for themselves, but several extras. The fourth man showed up a short time later with two horses. Taking saddles and tack from the barn, they got the animals ready to ride. Kingman and Ollie came back from Ollie's cabin. Kingman wore jeans, a flannel shirt, and a pair of high-topped boots. They weren't Ollie's, that much was certain. Ollie's clothes would have swallowed Kingman whole. Along with the fresh clothes, Kingman had a gun belt strapped around his hips with a black-butted Colt in its holster. He carried an old Henry rifle. Conrad smelled a pungent odor coming from him and figured it was that cow-doping salve Ollie had mentioned.
All right, I'm here. I just need a horse.
Conrad had already put a saddle on the roan for Arturo and was tightening his own saddle on the black. He leaned his head toward the spare mounts.
Take your pick, but you'll have to be fast about it. The rest of us are ready to ride.
Listen here, Browning. I don't know what makes you think you can give or...
Kingman's angry response stopped short as he made a visible effort to control himself. Clearly, he didn't like the fact that Conrad seemed to have taken charge of the rescue effort, but they had called an implied truce earlier. Conrad hoped that was what caused Kingman to rein in his temper. It might be the man was just biding his time, taking advantage of Conrad's offer to help rescue Selena, all the while plotting how he could double-cross Conrad and Arturo later once Selena was safe. That was assuming that they were able to rescue her, Conrad thought. And the odds against that were pretty long.
How many of us are going?
8.
Is that all? What happened to the rest of the men who survived the raid? There were more than 6 of us, weren't there?
They've, decided they don't want to stay here anymore, Dan. They're gonna move on.
And let Leatherwood get away with what he's done?
That's their decision to make. Are we ready to go?
Conrad looked around at the members of the group. All of them nodded except Kingman, who put his foot in the stirrup and swung up into the saddle. He kicked his horse into a run. Conrad and the others mounted and followed at a slower pace.
Dan doesn't need to be running that horse so hard. It'll play out and then he'll be stuck.
That's his problem. He's smart enough to realize what he's doing is stupid. If he keeps it up, he'll have no one to blame but himself.
And Kingman having to give up the chase would be a mixed blessing, Conrad mused. On the one hand, not having Kingman with them meant they'd have one less gun. On the other hand, it also meant Conrad wouldn't have to worry about Kingman shooting him in the back during a battle with the Avenging Angels. By the time they reached the pass, Kingman had stopped to wait for them.
I guess I lost my head a little back there. We've got to push ourselves pretty hard, or else we won't catch up to Leatherwood before he gets back to Juniper Canyon.
I think the odds of that are already pretty slim. Having to take the time to catch the horses gave them a good lead on us. Unless Leatherwood stops and makes camp for the night, I don't think we'll catch him.
He won't do that. He'll be too anxious to get back to Father Agony and deliver the prize to him. He knows where he's going, so he'll ride on through the night.
I agree. And we know where he's going, so we won't have to worry about following any trail they leave behind. We can head straight for Juniper Canyon.
Then let's do it.
Kingman heeled his horse into motion. The eight riders moved through the pass and started down the twisting trail on the other side. It took them back into the dry, inhospitable country that most of the region was like. A three-quarter moon had risen, and its silvery glow reflected off the impassable salt flats to the east, creating a white gleam that lit up the night almost like day. Kingman gradually pulled ahead again. Ollie brought his mount alongside Conrad's.
I'm worried about something, Mr. Browning.
What's that?
Even if we catch up to Leatherwood before he gets back to Juniper Canyon, and I know that ain't likely to happen, we'll still be outnumbered. If we don't catch up, that means we'll have to rescue Selena and the other women from Elder Hyssop's fort, and he'll have a lot more men to fight us than just Leatherwood and some Avenging Angels, so it'll be even worse.
Conrad looked over at Ollie.
Fort? Nobody said anything about a fort.
Well, it's not like a cavalry fort or anything like that. It's more like a big house, I guess you'd say, where Elder Hyssop and all his family live. He's got 7 wives already, you know, and there ain't no telling how many kids. I can't keep up with that. But Father Agony's old enough that some of his sons are grown men, and more of them almost are, and they'll fight for him. They'll do anything he tells them to. You can count on that, because he sees to it they get first call on all the women he don't want for himself. Then you've got some brothers and cousins and nephews thrown in, and some fellas who ain't related by blood, but might as well be. They've been following the Elder for so long. You might almost say he's got himself an army, since they can hole up in that big house with its thick adobe walls and a parapet on top where he puts riflemen. It just seems natural that you could call it
a fort. I see your point, Ollie.
I'm as anxious to get those gals back as anybody, but there's just 8 of us. 8. I'm starting to wonder just what it is we can do.
Well, that's the thing about a fort. It can be strong enough to keep out an army, but rats can still get in there. That's what we may have to be.
Rats?
That's right. Well-armed rats.
By the middle of the next day, Conrad and his companions had seen no sign of the men they were after. It had become obvious they weren't going to catch Jackson Leatherwood. He had to be pushing his Avenging Angels as hard as the pursuers were pushing themselves. Realizing that, Conrad called a halt to rest their horses. Kingman reined in, but he hipped around in the saddle.
We're wasting time by stopping now. These horses can go a little farther.
What's the earliest we could make it to Juniper Canyon if we didn't stop again? Sometime tonight?
It'd be midnight or later, even if we were able to ride straight through.
In that case, I don't see any point in wearing out our horses or killing them in an attempt to get there sooner. It would just leave us a lot worse off.
Kingman dismounted.
You're right, I know. I just can't stop thinking about Selena being their prisoner.
Leatherwood's not going to let anything happen to Selena before he gets her back to Hyssop. He'll want to deliver her safe and sound. I think you can be pretty sure of that.
Those Avenging Angels are killers, Dan, but they wouldn't mistreat a woman.
At least Kingman genuinely seemed to care about Selena, Conrad thought, and wasn't just upset because of the $2,000 he had lost at the same time. He had become an outlaw after he was banished from Juniper Canyon, but still had some human feelings. Of course, Conrad had a hunch Kingman would try to recover that loot, along with rescuing the women. If it came down to deciding between Selena and the money, Conrad had little confidence in which one Kingman would choose. As they continued along the railroad, Conrad spotted the water tank at Navajo Wash. Each man had a canteen slung on his saddle, but in the hot, dry country, a single canteen didn't last all that long. Between the men and the horses, the water supply was already running low. It was a good chance to top off their canteens. He remembered water spraying out through the bullet holes in the tank where Leatherwood's men had shot at it. If a train had come along since then and stopped to take the water for its boiler, the train crew likely had noted the problem and patched the holes. Even if that wasn't the case, the tank would still have water in below the level of the bullet holes.
Kingman, we're gonna stop up ahead at Navajo Wash.
Riding in front as usual, Kingman glanced around as if he were gonna argue, but then he nodded. No matter how upset he was, in country like this, a man never lost track of how much water he had left and where he could get more. If he let himself get too distracted and forgot about those things, 9 times out of 10, the buzzards wound up picking his bones. The riders moved on toward the water tank. Conrad found himself staring at it, thinking about the furious gun battle he and Arturo had fought there a couple of days earlier against the Avenging Angels. It seemed more like ages had passed since then. It was hard to keep track of things when people were trying to kill you all the time, he told himself with an inward chuckle. After a while, all the deadly days started to run together. Sunlight suddenly winked off something on the tank. A nail head, maybe, or some sort of metal strap. But the reflection moved, bouncing against Conrad's eyes again from a slightly different position, and he knew it wasn't any nail head.
Spread out!
Conrad kicked the black into a run.
Everybody spread out!
Arturo reacted instantly. He had done a good job learning the lessons that traveling with Conrad Browning taught a man. He veered his horse in the opposite direction from Conrad's and urged it into a hard gallop. The outcast saints were a little slower to move. Suddenly, one of the men jerked back in his saddle. He managed to stay mounted, but sagged forward over his horse's neck and dropped the reins. The horse spooked and bolted ahead in a run. Seeing their companion shot prodded the other men into frantic action. They followed the example set by Conrad and Arturo and raced off in all different directions, no longer easy to cut down. Conrad leaned forward in the saddle as he rode. Drawing his Winchester from its sheath, he watched the water tank. He could see one man up on the platform. No, more than that, he corrected himself as more shots rang out. 2 or 3 at least, and men were firing from behind the shed. Leatherwood had split his force. Though the Avenging Angels had left their surviving enemies defeated and demoralized, he knew there was a chance they would mount a pursuit. He had left men at Navajo Wash to ambush anyone who came after them, to make sure he reached Juniper Canyon with the prizes he had claimed for Father Agony. It was good strategy. The rescuers would have to fight, and they had already suffered an injury, maybe a fatality. Conrad had lost sight of the wounded man. He crossed the tracks and circled to the left of the water tank. Guiding the black with his knees, he levered around into the Winchester's chamber and fired at the tank. The back of a galloping horse was no place for accuracy, so he didn't try to be too fine about his shots. He cranked off a half dozen rounds as fast as he could, spraying the platform. The tank would have more holes in it before the day was over. It wasn't the only thing with holes. One of the ambushers flew backward off the platform with his arms flailing. From that distance, his scream was a tiny little thing, cut short in a hurry as he crashed to the ground on his back. Conrad flashed past the tank. He felt the hot breath of a slug as it passed close to his cheek, but that was the closest any of the bushwhacker led came to him. He could see the men behind the shed, so he circled back toward the tracks to get a better shot at them. With a flash of pride, he noted Arturo coming in from the other side. He had the heart of a warrior, although he would have denied that. He was willing to fight and pitched in without hesitation. Conrad saw smoke spurting from the muzzle of Arturo's rifle. Kingman had chosen a different tactic, plunging straight ahead along the tracks. He had almost reached the tank without being shot when he hauled back on his horse's rein so violently the animal skidded to a halt and reared up on its hind legs, pawing at the air. Another man clutched at his belly and spun off the platform. Diving out of the saddle as the last man on the platform fired down at him at almost point-blank range, he rolled into the shadows under the tank, and that was the last Conrad saw of him for the moment. One of Leatherwood's men behind the shed was down, and 2 others were still on their feet, firing. Conrad's heart leaped into his throat as he saw Arturo's horse stumble and fall, but Arturo was thrown clear. He crashed to the ground, rolled over a couple of times, then lay still. He was an easy target. Before anyone could draw a bead on the fallen man, Ollie Barnstable came charging around the shed on his horse. He left the saddle in a dive and threw his arms out like the wings of a giant bird, embracing both gunmen. He drove them off their feet. One man rammed headfirst into the shed wall and collapsed. Before the other one could put up a fight, Ollie punched him square in the temple, knocking him out. Arturo pushed himself to his hands and knees, but was slow getting up. Since the three men who'd been behind the shed were taken care of, Conrad sent his horse galloping toward Arturo. Conrad was out of the saddle and off the black before the horse completely stopped moving. Taking hold of Arturo's arm, he helped him to his feet.
Are you all right? Were you hit by any of those bullets?
Just got the breath knocked out of me, sir. I'd be fine in a moment.
Conrad looked him over and didn't see any bloodstains on his clothes.
You were splendid just now, you know.
Thank you, sir. What about the others?
Let's go see.
Conrad took the reins of both horses and led them toward the shed and the water tank. Ollie stood over the sprawled bodies of the three men by the shed.
They're all dead.
The three who are up on the platform are done for, too.
What about our man who was wounded? If we get Dora back, she's gonna be a widow. Come to think of it, I guess she's a widow anyway, whether we get her back or not, because Todd's dead. Looked like that shot got him through the heart, the poor fella.
So now there's seven of us. The odds just got worse. Although they were so bad to start with, I don't reckon it really matters.
It matters. It'll matter to Dora.
Conrad looked at the bodies sprawled on the ground.
I don't suppose anybody thought to bring a shovel.
Once Todd was laid to rest, the group moved on quickly. They found the horses ridden by Leatherwood's men hidden in Navajo Wash and took the six animals with them. Extra amounts always came in handy, and they would need horses for Selena and the other women when they made their escape from Juniper Canyon. Conrad didn't think Leatherwood would divide his forces any more than he already had, so another ambush was unlikely. He warned his companions to remain alert anyway. Anything was possible. He recognized the spot where he and Arturo had first encountered Selena when she was being chased by Leatherwood and his men. But he didn't know how to get to Juniper Canyon from there, so he would have to rely on the others to lead the way. Kingman, Ollie, and the other three outcast saints had been born and raised there. It must have been hard to leave the only home they had ever known, Conrad thought. He had spent most of his childhood in Boston, although there had been trips to Europe. When he was older, his mother had taken him with her when she traveled across the country to check on her business interests. It had been during one such trip that Vivian Browning had been reunited with Frank Morgan, and Conrad had learned who his father really was. Heading north, away from the railroad, Conrad's group rode the third leg of the giant U-shape enclosing the terrible Salt Flats with Juniper Canyon on one side and the pass leading to the Valley of the Outcast Saints on the other. By nightfall, they hadn't reached the mountains where Agonistes Hyssop's stronghold was located, but they pushed on anyway, sipping from their canteens, gnawing on strips of jerky they had brought with them, stopping to rest the horses occasionally. The long, hard, dangerous day had left them gaunt, grim, and for the most part, silent. Conrad's companions reminded him a little of wolves, even Arturo and big friendly Ollie. He was sure he probably looked the same to them. Weariness sat heavily across his shoulders. The dark, looming bulk of the mountains drew steadily closer as the stars wheeled across the sky. The moon rose, arced across the heavens, and started its descent. The mountains appeared as far away as ever. Then suddenly they were looming over the seven riders like sleeping giants. Kingman reined in and pointed.
There. That's the mouth of Juniper Canyon.
Tell me about the place.
What do you want to know?
The terrain, how the canyon is shaped, how the community is laid out, that sort of thing. The things I'll need to know if we're going in there, rescue the women, and make it back out alive.
I'd still like to know... Never mind. The canyon. Let's see. Mouth of it's fairly narrow. Maybe a quarter mile wide. And it stays like that for a couple miles as it runs up the mountains. It's the only real gap for miles and long ridge that forms the edge of the mountains.
Does it run straight?
For the most part. There are a couple little bends, but no real turns. Then it opens out into a big basin at least a mile across. There's a spring right in the middle of the basin that forms a pool in the rocks. And that's where Elder Hyssop settled some 40 years ago. He always says he'd been wandering in the desert and an angel led him there, delivering him from certain death. I used to believe that story, but now I know that no self-respecting angel would have anything to do with Father Agony.
There are juniper trees growing around the pool. That's how the place got its name. And junipers on the slopes all around the canyon, too.
How steep are those slopes?
Pretty steep on the way in. A horse would have a hard time getting up and down them. At the end of the canyon where the settlement is, they're not so bad. There's decent grades in the hills all around. Well, decent for this part of the country, I guess you'd say. But not as good as we've got in our valley. The elder keeps his cattle up in those high pastures and grazes his sheep down in the basin, where the grass isn't as good.
What about the settlement itself?
Hyssop's house is the closest to the pool, since it was the first one built there. And it's a monstrosity. He built it for him and his original wife and kept adding on as he added wives and children. It's adobe. Two stories in some parts and three stories in others. The tallest part is a blasted watchtower he built on top of it. The roofs are flat so he can put riflemen up there and there are walls to give him cover. I remember when I was a kid and the Paiutes would go on for rampage. Everybody in the community would go to the elder's house for safety while the men fought off the Indians. Savages never got in. Never came close. Eventually, they gave up and quit trying.
I told you it was a fort.
What about the rest of the houses?
Scattered all over the place. Along with barns, corrals, blacksmith shop, a saddlery, a mill, a couple grain warehouses, and things like that. Most of them are built of adobe, but there's some log cabins, too. The men who are Hyssop's longtime followers, the ones who are members of his inner circle, I guess you'd say, have the best houses, and the houses that are closest to Father Agnes.
Sounds like everything in the place revolves around him.
That's exactly the way it is. He was supposed to be our leader in living according to God's teachings, but somehow it got to be about worshiping him. Although he'd call you a blasphemer and set Leatherwood and the Avenging Angels on you if you ever dared to say such a thing.
You sound like you're speaking from experience.
I had my share of run-ins with Father Agony, even before I knew he and his lecherous sights set on Selena. I guess it was inevitable there'd be a showdown. And inevitable who would win, too. If I had stayed, Leatherwood or one of Hyssop's other triggerites would have gunned me down.
I've heard this word, triggerite, used several times, but I don't think I've ever encountered the term before now. I assume it means the same thing as a gunman.
Yeah, it comes from that song about Porter Rockwell.
Who?
His name is Porter Rockwell. He's the Mormon triggerite.
Rockwell wasn't just an avenging angel. People called him the destroying angel. He was the personal bodyguard to Joseph Smith and to Brigham Young. If they wanted somebody dead, well, that fella usually wound up dead. And everybody knew old Port was responsible. If you ask me, Leatherwood's always wanted to be as famous as Porter Rockwell, and it gnaws at his gut that he's not.
Hearing about Porter Rockwell was interesting, but not relevant to why they were there. Conrad decided to steer the conversation back along more useful lines.
If the terrain around Hyssop's stronghold isn't that rough, we ought to be able to get in that way instead of going straight up the canyon.
Nope. Not from this direction. The country on the other side of the ridge isn't that bad, but the ridge itself is too steep and rough. You couldn't get horses over it. To get them from the other side, you'd have to circle so far around it would take you days, maybe even a week. We can't leave Selena in Hyssop's hands for a week. If we do, she'll be his wife by then. If she's not already.
Then we'll have to go straight up the canyon after all. I assume Hyssop keeps it guarded?
Some of Leatherwood's men are always on watch.
We'll need to take care of them somehow. You said men could climb the ridge and make their way along it?
That's right. We could get behind them that way. I know where they camp to watch the entrance. Leatherwood sends men in groups of three out there for several days at a time. Two of them are always on guard while the other one sleeps.
How do they signal the stronghold if there's trouble?
They fire off some shots.
Then we'll have to be fast and quiet and make sure they don't get a chance to do that.
Way?
I think it's a job for two men, and whether we like it or not, you and I are the ones best suited to the job.
In only a few hours, it would be dawn, but there was no time to waste once Conrad had figured out what to do. Kingman insisted he knew every foot of the ridge, even in the dark, having explored it hundreds of times when he was a boy. As Conrad and Kingman got ready to go, Ollie and Arturo walked over.
There'll be three guards. I ought to come with you so the odds will be even.
One of the men will be asleep when we get to their camp. We'll have to handle the other two quickly enough that we can be ready for him when he wakes up. Once we've taken care of the guards, I'll come to the mouth of the canyon and signal the rest of you. It'll be fast, so watch close for it. I'll strike a match and hold it in front of my body where it can't be seen from inside the canyon. Pass my other hand back and forth in front of it three times. When you see that blinking light, bring the horses to the canyon. Don't waste any time, but try to be as quiet as you can. It's likely sound travels well up the canyon at night.
We understand. What then?
Somebody will wait with the horses where the canyon opens into the basin, while the rest of us head for Hyssop's house to look for the women. If we can sneak in and get them out of there without anybody knowing, that's fine. But there's a better chance we'll have to fight our way back to the horses. When we get there, we'll mount up and try to make it back to the valley on the other side of the salt flats before Leatherwood can catch up to us.
If we can get there, we can hold the pass, even if we just have a small force. We might even be able to close it if we have time to prepare some charges. You know about things like that, Conrad. What do you think?
A well-placed blast or two would probably drop enough rock in the pass to close it, but you'd never be able to use it again. Is there another way out of that valley? I didn't see one, but I never really got a good look at it.
I don't know if there is or not. I haven't explored the whole place. But even if we can't leave, why would we want to? You saw it. It's paradise on Earth. At least as close to it as you're going to find in this part of the country. Maybe we ought to call it Paradise Valley. We could live out our lives there and be happy.
That might be all right for you, but Arturo and I can't stay there. We have business elsewhere. We'd have to get out before you blow the charges.
That could put you at Leatherwood's mercy.
We'll have to run the risk. Maybe I should speak for myself. Arturo, you might want to stay in Paradise Valley.
Good heavens, no. No offense to you, gentlemen. I am certain you'll have wonderful lives here, but my place is elsewhere. Also, we are putting the proverbial cart before the hypothetical horse here, are we not? We have yet to penetrate Juniper Canyon, let alone rescue Miss Webster and the other ladies and make our escape with them.
Good point. Everybody clear about what we're doing?
The rest of the men nodded.
All right, let's go.
Good luck, sir.
Conrad nodded, and then they were off. He let Kingman take the lead. The base of the ridge was almost sheer, but after looking around a bit, Kingman found a narrow trail they were able to use. It was little more than a series of footholds and handholds, and Conrad saw that Kingman had been right. A horse would never be able to maneuver up and down the trail. The slope eased, so they were able to walk rather than climb, but it was still rugged. Looking at the ridge, it didn't seem to be that tall and intimidating, but getting to the top seemed to take forever. Conrad worried too much time was passing. They needed darkness if they were going to have any chance of getting in and out of Elder Hyssop's house without getting caught. Eventually, they came out on top of the ridge, which was a couple of miles wide, composed of jagged clefts and pinnacles. In the moonlight, it looked like alien landscape, like several other places he had been recently, Conrad thought. He was sure he had never come across country as downright inhospitable as that corner of Utah. The vast, barren ugliness made the occasional oasis seem idyllic.
Are you sure you know your way through this maze? It looks like a man could wander around in it forever.
I can get through it.
All right. I don't have any choice but to trust you.
That's right. You don't. You ready?
Yeah.
Let's go.
They set off again. Kingman led the way around spires of rock and across chasms spanned by narrow natural stone bridges. It was a harrowing path, especially in the dark, but the moon and stars provided enough light for Conrad to see where his companion was going, and he was careful to step in the same place as Kingman stepped. After less than an hour, Kingman held up a hand in a signal to halt. He leaned close to Conrad.
We're almost there. We'll have to climb down, but it's not too bad. When we get to the floor of the canyon, there'll be some trees to our left, about 200 yards away. That's where the guards' camp is. We'll work our way along the wall toward them. We'll be behind them, so they shouldn't see us coming, but be careful anyway.
I intend to.
Kingman nodded. He moved ahead, and a few minutes later, they reached the rim of the canyon. The ground dropped away. Stunted junipers grew out of the steep slope, demonstrating how stubborn and hardy they were. The sharp tang of their scent filled the air. Conrad watched as Kingman turned around and backed over the edge, then began climbing down between the trees, catching hold of a protruding root here and there to steady himself. Conrad followed in the same way, moving slowly and deliberately. The canyon wall wasn't sheer. He would probably survive a tumble, but it would cause a racket, alerting the guards, and that could certainly prove fatal. When his boots touched the canyon floor, Kingman was waiting and pointed at the dark cluster of trees that was their objective. Conrad nodded. They set off toward the trees, using every bit of stealth at their command. As they approached the camp, Conrad heard two men talking together in quiet voices. Kingman stopped and pressed himself against the trunk of a juniper, and Conrad followed suit, figuring Kingman wanted to eavesdrop on the conversation for a moment before they struck. They might find out something important. The two guards were having a mild argument about the proper way to shear a sheep. Conrad didn't think he and Kingman were going to learn anything useful, but the sheep shearing discussion led to the subject of mutton.
Do you think there'll be any at the wedding feast?
Of course. There'll be a little of everything at the feast, I expect. Elder Hyssop's so excited to be marrying the Webster girl, he wants a big celebration.
Yeah, I'm glad our turn on guard will be over this morning. I'd hate to miss it.
So, Hyssop hadn't forced Selena to marry him as soon as Leatherwood brought her back to Juniper Canyon. Good to know, Conrad thought. But the wedding would be soon, no doubt about that.
You don't think that Kingman boy will show up, do you?
He'd be a fool if he did. Brother Jackson will kill him on sight. Of course, in the long run, it won't matter. Kingman and all the rest of those outcast saints are doomed. Elder Hyssop wants the Avenging Angels to go back over there and clean out that nest of sinners.
About time.
Given what they had just heard, Kingman's idea of blowing up the pass and sealing off the valley wasn't so far-fetched. It might take that to prevent his community from being wiped out. Conrad had his doubts about how well it would work out, but that might be the only alternative. First, though, they had to survive the rest of the night and the day to come by taking care of the guards. Conrad's eyes had adjusted well enough to the shadows under the trees that he could see the two men sitting on a log next to a cold fire pit. To one side was a tent where the third guard was sleeping. To Conrad's left, behind one of the trees, Kingman drew his gun and nodded. Conrad's Colt was already in his hand. He returned the nod. The plan was to knock out the guards, tie them up, and gag them. They would do the same to the third guard. Just as Conrad and Kingman moved into the open, one of the guards suddenly stood up and turned around.
I need to... What the...
Before the other guard could get his rifle up, Conrad flung himself forward, his left hand closing around the rifle barrel. Instead of wrenching the weapon out of the guard's hand, which would have caused it to go off, he shoved it as hard as he could. He drove the stock into the guard's belly. The guard doubled over and let go of the rifle. Conrad swung the revolver in his hand and smashed its barrel against the man's head. The guard dropped instantly and didn't move when he hit the ground. Kingman had leaped forward with matching swiftness. The second guard barely had time to react when Kingman's gun crashed against his head. It knocked his hat flying, and the man crumpled. The commotion roused the third guard. He burst out of the tent with his suspenders flapping around his hips and ran right into Conrad's hard fist. The punch caught him solidly on the nose. As soon as he hit the ground, Kingman finished the job with a sharp rap from his gun butt. The man stretched out in a limp sprawl. Conrad and Kingman holstered their Colts. A second later, Conrad saw a reflection of moonlight on steel and realized Kingman had drawn a knife and bent toward the unconscious man.
What are you doing? We were just going to fix it where they couldn't raise the alarm.
I guarantee they won't make any racket if their throats are cut.
Hold it. You're too quick to resort to murder to make sure people don't cause problems for you, Kingman.
Blasted, this is none of your business.
As long as I'm risking my life and the life of my friend to help you, it is. Kill those men in cold blood, and you and Ollie and the others are on your own. Arturo and I are riding away.
You're awful high and mighty. You never did anything that was over the line, Browning?
We said we'd tie them up and gag them, and that's what we're going to do.
Fine!
Kingman jammed his knife back in its sheath.
We're wasting time!
Conrad couldn't argue with that. He and Kingman worked quickly, using the men's belts to tie their hands behind them, ripping strips from their shirts to lash their ankles and knees together, and stuffing bandanas in their mouths as gags. They dragged the unconscious men deeper into the trees and left them there. While Kingman looked up the canyon to make sure no one else was around, Conrad hurried to its mouth about 50 yards away from the guard's camp and dug a lucifer out of his pocket. He snapped it to life with his thumbnail and moved his other hand back and forth in front of it in the signal he had told the others. He blew out the match and tossed it to the ground. A couple of minutes later, he heard hoofbeats approaching. Shadowy shapes came into sight.
Conrad!
Here!
Arturo, Ollie, and the other three men led the horses up to the mouth of the canyon.
Kingman's scouting the other way, but it should be all clear. Come on.
He led them into the canyon, where they met Kingman trotting back toward them a few minutes later.
Everything's quiet and peaceful, far as I can tell.
All right. Lead the way.
They moved at a deliberate pace so as not to make much noise with the horses they were leading. It took 3/4 of an hour to reach the other end of the canyon. Once again, Conrad worried that too much time was passing, that the sun was going to come up soon, but hurrying could be disastrous. He had to be patient, which wasn't always an easy thing for him. They stopped a couple of 100 yards before the canyon widened into the basin where the settlement was located.
Who's staying with the horses? And you better not say that I am, Brown, because I'm telling you right now...
Take it easy. Arturo, you're staying.
I'm perfectly willing to come along and shoulder my share of the risks.
I know that. We also need somebody dependable to keep up with these horses. We're liable to need mounts in a hurry when we get back here.
Yes, that does seem to be an important job. All right, I agree. It's the logical thing to do. I'm probably not as proficient at violence as these other gentlemen. Although Lord knows circumstances have forced me to become more so than I ever thought I would be.
Life has a way of doing that.
Conrad turned to the others.
Where will Hyssop have Selena and the other women? What would he consider proper since he's going to be marrying her soon?
Selena would have been returned to her father. I can show you the house.
What about the other women?
They'll have gone back to their families too. They're all promised to some of Father Agony's cronies. That's why they ran away to start with. Their fathers will have the job of keeping them under control until those weddings can be set up.
Then you know where to look for them. Can you get into the houses?
I'll just try and stop us.
Don't get trigger happy. A bunch of shooting will rouse the whole settlement. Ideally, what you'd like to do is get in and rescue the women without anybody even knowing about it. If that's not possible, don't shoot unless you absolutely have to.
I've got an idea. Instead of us splitting up, why don't me and these three fellas all go together to each house where one of the gals is being held? That way, if there's trouble, we can all handle it. And I'm big enough I can usually stop trouble before it really starts, if I do say so myself.
Ollie, that's an excellent idea. The four of you gather up the other women, Arturo will take care of the horses, and Dan and I will go after Selena.
What about Leatherwood? You said we were going to get vengeance on him, and on Hyssop.
What's more important, the lives of the women and the lives of your friends, or vengeance?
We can't let them get away with the things they've done.
If we get those women away from them, I think there's a mighty good chance you'll have an opportunity to deal out some revenge to Leatherwood and Hyssop. They're not going to let you ride away with Selena and the other ladies.
That's true. And I know you're right. The most important thing is rescuing the women. I just hate to miss a chance to kill those two like the low-life snakes they are.
Speaking of Leatherwood, where do he and the other avenging angels stay while they're here in Juniper Canyon?
Their quarters are in a long, low adobe building next to Hyssop's house.
So if there's any trouble at the Elders, they'll be handy.
That's right.
Where does Selena's father live?
A little farther away, in another adobe house.
Can't count on a racket going unheard by the avenging angels, then.
Not really.
I guess we better not make any more racket than we have to.
Conrad looked around at the men.
Anybody think of anything else?
They shook their heads.
I guess we're ready to go then. There's maybe an hour and a half until it'll be light enough to see. We need to be out of here before then if we're going to have any chance to get away. Good luck.
They started off at a trot through the darkness. Conrad hesitated just long enough to shake hands with Arturo, then started after Kingman. He never went into something thinking he wasn't going to survive, but he knew that possibility always existed. It was definitely a lion's den situation. Elder Hyssop had a couple hundred devoted followers at his beck and call, ready to help him with whatever trouble he had, and about 36 of them were avenging angels, fanatical triggerites who would just as soon kill a man as look at him. Conrad had 6 desperate young men. Those were pretty piss-poor odds, Conrad thought. They went beyond piss poor. They were downright suicidal. But he and his companions had come too far to give up. Too much was at stake.